from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch, where we bring you insights, analysis, and interviews on some of the most important issues facing you and your family. And we do it all from a biblical worldview. So for the next hour, we're going to navigate the conflicts and the complexities of our nation's capital with clarity, integrity, and a relentless pursuit of truth. Washington Watch starts now.
Every time Republicans bring this up, this is a huge fundraising opportunity for Democrats, and it just continues to put a finer point that Trump took credit for this, for something that is polling terribly for Republicans, and it is a winning issue for Democrats.
That was Megan Hayes, former special assistant to President Joe Biden, on MSNBC yesterday, talking about why Democrats are energized by the Arizona Supreme Court decision that upheld a pro-life law that goes back to the start of the state. Now, many Republicans are, in fact, running from it, and most Democrats are fundraising on it. So how do you take the profit away from the left on the issue of abortion? Well, you navigate the transitory political tumult by staying focused on the transcendent principle that all life has value because it is created in the image of God. The co-chair of the House Pro-Life Caucus, New Jersey Congressman Chris Smith, is going to join me for that conversation in just a moment. I mentioned this briefly yesterday, but a subcommittee of the House Foreign Affairs Committee held a hearing yesterday on China's growing and malign influence on the United Nations.
I once viewed China's engagement with UN with leery optimism. Today, I view China's growing weight at the UN as a challenge to be met. The UN has become a key test for Beijing's global leadership ambitions, and it is not a stage China will surrender lightly.
That was Suzanne Nosel, former deputy to the UN ambassador, to the U.S. ambassador to the UN, testifying before the subcommittee. We're going to get a readout on that hearing and why it matters from Georgia Congressman and ER doc Rich McCormick. And this set off the media. Granted, it doesn't take much to set the media off when it comes to Donald Trump.
He is not supporting Israel. He has abandoned Israel. And any Jewish person that votes for a Democrat or votes for Biden should have their head examined.
That was former President Donald Trump last night as he arrived for an event in Georgia, saying that the positions of our current president, President Joe Biden, is incompatible with Jewish votes. Now, is that accurate? I've asked one of my Jewish friends to join us today. Matthew Farashi is president of Gideon 300, and he joins us here a little bit later. Now, this is a game changer, or at least it should be.
The report is very clear that children and young people have been badly let down and have been receiving treatment that's not based on evidence. So I think the CAS review is really important. We welcome it. Labour accepts all of its recommendations. I think they should be implemented now as swiftly as possible.
That was British Shadow Home Secretary Yvette Cooper, a member of the British Parliament, commenting on a landmark independent review that was commissioned by the National Health Service in England on gender-related medical services for minors. Now, the review looked at literally dozens of studies on the recommendations as it pertains to treatment for gender dysphoria in minors. And guess what they found? Weak evidence at best supporting the gender transition treatments currently being employed. Now, will this change practices here in the U.S.? Dr. Jill Simmons joins us. She's executive director of the American College of Pediatricians. She'll be here later. Finally, when you combine research like the NHS report focused on science with a theological treatise like the one from the Vatican released earlier this week, will this have an impact on the 2024 elections and how people vote? Meg Kilgannon joins me for that conversation. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything, you can find it all later right there at TonyPerkins.com. All right, events from this week have brought into focus the impact the life issue will have on this first post-Roe presidential election year. Now, you may recall President Biden launched his reelection campaign at a rally for abortion activists. Since then, more than 50% of his campaign ads have featured the Democrats' commitment to abortion. Now, that is abortion until birth, funded by taxpayers, and in some cases, beyond birth. Now, how should Republicans respond to this propaganda campaign? This really goes to the heart of what America is about, the most vulnerable among us. And it would appear that after the Dobbs decision, many Republicans were not prepared to talk about this. Some are running away from it because it is politically charged. But how can you leave a principled issue that is a defining issue? Well, join me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Chris Smith. He's a senior member of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs and a co-chair of the House Task Force for Combating Anti-Semitism. He is also the co-chair of the House Pro-Life Caucus. He represents the 4th Congressional District of New Jersey. Congressman Smith, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
Tony, thank you very much for having me on. And again, thank you for your leadership on life, on human rights, on religious freedom. You've been a superstar.
Well, let me go back to your origins to coming to Congress nearly 40 years ago. It was on this issue of life. You came out of the pro-life movement. Your work that you do on behalf of the persecuted around the globe, whether it's religious persecution or other tyrants that are persecuting human beings, it stems from that understanding that all life has value because it is created in the image of God.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, the scripture couldn't be clearer that when our Lord said in Matthew 25, whatsoever you do to the least of these or to the least of my brethren, you do likewise to me. So that's all about situational, you know, whether it be a political prisoner who may be the most courageous man or woman on earth, but they're in prison, they're being tortured. They're the least in terms of their situation. And the unborn child are also the least because of their very dependent situation. And unfortunately today, with well over 65 million unborn babies that have been killed by abortion, a very violent procedure that either chemically poisons, causes the child to starve to death, and that's what the abortion bill does, or are literally dismembered and decapitated during the process. All of that is shunted aside by the pro-abortion movement, which talks in euphemisms. We love them both, as you know, Tony. It's about loving the mother and loving the child as well, or children, if it happens to be twins. We got to love them both and help them both, especially if it's a difficult situation for the mom. And that's why pregnancy care centers are a gift from God. They do amazing work to help these women through it. And so we need to just redouble our efforts. And the abortion movement is trying to eviscerate those from the face of the earth as well.
They are.
Not just this country, all over the world.
They are.
Competition with Planned Parenthood, which is Child Abuse Incorporated.
So let's talk about the Democrats are prepared to spend more than $100 million messaging on the issue of abortion. They had success in 2022 because many Republican candidates were silent, and this allowed the Democrats to define the Republicans on this issue. Why are Republicans, not all, just some, those who actually embrace it, understand it, and run on it have done quite well. Why is there fear over this issue that Republicans have been talking about for over 40 years?
Well, I think the political consultants, and that goes for some Republicans as well, have so warned members of Congress and other legislatively elected people to don't engage the issue. I believe just the opposite. And you know, I've been in Congress now for 44 years. I had a district that was on the, at least when you polled it, was very, very strongly pro-abortion. And I never, not once, shied away and made clear that it's all about defense of the vulnerable and the weakest among us, and that we need to find alternatives to abortion. And even when they lie about us, which I had in my last two campaigns, a lot of lies, last three campaigns, you just repel it. You bend into the wind and not with it. As soon as they see your back, you're toast politically. So I just would encourage all lawmakers and aspiring candidates who want to run for office, embrace the issue. You know, this is the killing of our children. And it's a very, it's not a pretty picture. It's very ugly. And they just like to look askance and talk in euphemisms.
I mean, I think from one perspective, when voters are looking at what Republicans are saying or not saying right now, this looks like it's strictly a political issue as opposed to a principled issue. I mean, right. It doesn't matter which way the political winds are blowing if you're standing on principle, and that's what the life issue is. But let me just talk politics for just a moment on this, because only 31% of Americans think abortion should be legal in all cases up until the moment of birth, even less when you throw in taxpayer funding of it. So that would leave 69% of Americans do believe that there should be restrictions on abortion. The position of the Democratic Party stated in their platform and being pushed by their president is abortion until birth funded by taxpayers. That's an extreme position.
It's a radical, it's an extreme position, it is an anti-child, and I would argue it's an anti-mother position because, you know, we like to love them both, help them both. You're doing no favor by making it easier and facilitating, as you pointed out, abortion right up until the moment of birth. And if you read the language, you know, the Women's Health Act, terrible name, that's what they named it. It passed twice in the House when the Democrats controlled the House of Representatives. It got rid of every single modest protection, including women's right to know laws, parental notification statutes, and would compel public funding for abortion, taxpayer funding for every abortion. They are all in this culture of death that they have embraced.
So,
and to stand up against it, it's so radical, it boggles my mind that so, people have known for years.
Let me ask, Congressman Smith, let me ask you about it. Is that the type of law we would have in this land if the Democrats controlled the House along with the Senate and the White House?
I think every voter and every man or woman of conscience has to realize if they win the House and the Senate and Biden and Harris get back in, they made it very clear that he can't wait to get this legislation on his desk for signature. And every pro-life protection ever enacted over the last 50 years since Roe versus Wade would be gone overnight. And we will have massive numbers of abortion. If it gets promoted, Planned Parenthood and all the other groups would get even more money, which they already get unconscionably large numbers of money from the federal and local government. And they will market it. They will push it. And rather than defend life, we would be in the business of taking it wholesale.
Very quickly, in one sentence, we only got like 20 seconds left. What should people, pro-lifers, be saying about this to their neighbors, to their friends and coworkers as we go into this election?
Perhaps more than ever before, this is the pivot point, because if the Senate remains Democratic and the House goes Democratic, it's Republican now by a razor-thin margin, and they keep the White House, they will get rid of the filibuster, allowing them to pass this egregious human rights abusing law, a bill right now, God forbid it ever become law, called the Women's Health Act, and we'll have abortion on demand, and we'll all be paying for it. And countless numbers of children who might otherwise be saved and protected would be lost to the abortionist knife. And don't forget, as they're doing surgical abortions, they're beheading the child in the process.
This undercuts humanity and civility in this country. This is what I think is leading to such disregard for human life in this country. Chris, we're out of time, but always great to have you on the program.
So Thank you. Pray as never before.
Absolutely. Pray, vote, and stand, my friends. That was Congressman Chris Smith, pro-life hero. All right, don't go away. We're coming back right after this.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Lila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch, the website, tonyperkins.com. Be sure and check it out. All right, according to cybersecurity experts and U.S. officials, the Chinese Communist Party's efforts to infiltrate U.S. infrastructure is staggering in both its size and scope, placing emergency services, military installations, and satellites in jeopardy. That's been the focus of some subcommittee hearings and various hearings on Capitol Hill this week. Is enough effort underway to deter such threats? Is America distracted by some other issues? Joining me now to discuss this and more, Congressman Rich McCormick. He serves on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, the House Armed Services Committee, and the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology. He is a decorated Marine helicopter pilot and an emergency room doctor. He represents the 6th Congressional District of Georgia. Dr. McCormick, Semper Fi, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Semper Fi, good to see you.
So FBI Director Christopher Wray has repeatedly warned of the CCP's hacking capabilities. What else do we know? How serious of a threat is this?
Well, we do know we can't always talk about it because a lot of this stuff is classified. That's the problem. The American public really needs to be informed on a lot of this stuff so they can put pressures in the right areas, too. Unfortunately, a lot of this stuff is not declassified. Sometimes on purpose, sometimes because we just get used to containing this information. But quite frankly, we don't have to worry just about cybersecurity and being having our information stolen. But we recently had a bunch of hospitals shut down their billing process. Just that alone could be destructive to not just information stealing of patients' information, but also to how we reimburse medicine and hospitals and doctors. It sounds like a trivial thing, but when that happens for a couple of weeks, you're talking about billions of dollars in impact. One out of every three patients, that just happened recently. And we just had the Doctors Caucus talk to people about that. We're being constantly attacked, relentlessly attacked. And it's disruptive to our entire society. It can happen on power grids. It can happen to your information. It can happen to businesses. This is something that we have to be more and more aware of because as AI comes into its full fruition, it starts to affect us. It can literally be like this scenario out of movies where you see stoplights change the wrong color at the wrong time. It could cause catastrophes, shut down your power to a hospital. It could do all kinds of horrible things that would impact our economy and our society in major ways.
I mean, this puts a lot of responsibility on the government because if there's one thing the government has a responsibility to do, it takes on a lot that it really shouldn't. But one is to protect us, and this would be one of those areas. When you, and I know a lot of this is classified, but this week, debate on FISA. Does that type of threat factor into this debate over FISA and what government should and shouldn't be able to do?
Absolutely. This is the push-pull, and even a person like myself who has a lot of background in security, at a top-secret clearance in the military, we used to get classified briefs constantly, and here in Congress where we get all kinds of classified briefs, once you get top-secret information, you realize the threat that's real. We realize that 11 million people have come across the border in the last 3 years, 2 million of them undocumented. We have no idea who they are. I mean, when President Biden says, oh, undocumented migrants, well, no, actually, 9 million of those are very well documented because you sent a record number of people down there to process them in. Meanwhile, all those people, instead of stopping people at the border, were processing people and let 2 million that they did not capture. Those people could do real harm to America. And if the FBI has their hands tied, we don't have FISA in some way, shape, or form, it could result in the deaths of Americans, of something horribly disrupted, something along the lines of 9/11. Who knows? So we have to have something in place, but we also have to have guardrails because we've seen the FBI abuse their powers. We've seen this, as a matter of fact, they break the law. They have to be held accountable. The problem is we can make new laws. If they don't follow them, it doesn't matter.
Right.
The FBI has ignored laws in the past. So has President Biden. We have the same laws now that we had during his the Obama administration, yet we're not enforcing the border. So when somebody, a bureaucracy or a president, ignores those laws, we have a significant problem.
It goes back to what John Adams said. Our government only works for a moral and religious people. We've got to have self-government. We've got to allow ourselves to be ruled by law, or else we become we have a tyrannical government. We're almost out of time. I want to switch gears for just a moment. Different topic. You've dealt with the dysfunction that often affects Congress, and you've explained why you oppose what Marjorie Taylor Greene has introduced as another motion to vacate the chair. Is that a good or a bad idea?
It's a horrible idea. First of all, there's no backup. What are you going to do, come up with a new speaker? Who? We took a couple weeks last time, and we tried to sort it out. Mike Johnson was chosen by God, I think. He's a humble man. He's a moral man. He's a conservative man. He was the chair of the RSC. He believes in conservative values. Has he had to bring some things to the floor he didn't want to? Did he have to phrase it the way he didn't want to? Of course. He's got a one-vote majority. He's trying to hold this together until we can get the Senate back. Have I voted against things he's brought to the floor? Of course I have. But who is your backup plan? What is your backup plan? Just throwing a grenade amongst us is not going to solve our problem. If you're in a team, and we are a team, not everybody on the team agrees with each other, but if you're actively tackling our quarterback, that's not going to result in something we want. It's just like when somebody votes against something that they don't think is conservative enough, and you end up with a Senate bill that's more liberal because you failed our bill. You wouldn't even let it come to a vote. That doesn't result in a more conservative bill. And sometimes people are just not taking a look at what's reality. When you have a one-vote majority and you don't have the Senate, you don't have the presidency, let's get what we can. Let's make an incremental change. Don't swing for the fences and lose everything. This is a horrible idea that will result in horrible things, and it could lose us a majority if we're not careful.
You know, people don't realize that the speaker doesn't tell everybody what to do. He has to lead, and there has to be willing participants. And when you've got such narrow margins, and you have some independent thinkers who, quite frankly, are just disruptors and will not work as a team, I mean, would you agree he has a difficult job?
Well, think about this. We're not supposed to all agree with each other. And sometimes people think that they define the Republican Party. Like in church, this is a religious group. This is at least a spiritual group. When you have somebody walk in and say, thank you, Lord, that I'm not like these other sinners, these tax collectors and adulterers and like, and they think they define the church. You have people like them in the Republican Party, too, that think their thought defines the Republican Party. If everybody in your church agrees with each other, or everybody agrees with each other in a political party, it might be a cult.
Right.
We have to be allowed to disagree with each other to have the legislative process make exactly what it's supposed to, where we get to disagree, we get to vote on it, and then the majority wins. We're in the majority, but if we lose the majority, it doesn't matter what we won't bring anything to the table anymore. We'll lose total control.
You've got to do it in a way, though, that leads the effort forward. And I think that is the key. Congressman McCormick, always great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Always a pleasure. God bless you. Semper Fidelis.
All right. Semper Fi. All right. Don't go away. More Washington Watch straight ahead on this Thursday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Welcome back to Washington Watch, the website TonyPerkins.com. All right, as Israel's war against Hamas continues, the Biden administration has joined most other countries in abandoning Israel. I mean, yesterday, former President Donald Trump criticized President Biden's handling of the situation and suggested Jewish voters in America should not vote for President Biden or any other Democratic candidates. Well, as the left continues to drive the Biden administration's policies further away from Israel, will we see what was once a solid Democrat vote block reconsider? Joining me now to talk about this is Matthew Farashi. He is the founder and president of Inspire Buzz and Gideon 300, also a member of the Jewish community. Matthew, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing well. A question for you. Yesterday, former President Trump said that the Biden administration has totally abandoned Israel. And he said, you know, any Jewish person who votes for a Democrat or votes for Biden should have their head examined. And, of course, the media has reacted, gone off the deep end on that. What's your reaction?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Tony, because before the Holocaust, there were a lot of there were people I had even talked to, relatives of mine, who had told me that they had a really hard time believing, you know, people that had been German citizens for a long time, they had a really hard time believing the rhetoric that they were hearing, much like a lot of the rhetoric that we are starting to hear, unfortunately, on the left, and we're starting to hear some on the right as well, that's very concerning. And so they had a hard time accepting that things were going the way that they're going. And I think likewise here in America, and thank God for this, as Jews, we've had a wonderful, run here in America. America has been a welcoming place. It's included us as part of the society. If you think about it, Tony, so much of the music and entertainment and, you know, Jews are part of the fabric of America, part of the fundamental fabric of America. And so because of that, I think that probably a lot of Jews feel very comfortable and are unused to this sort of new reality where you have the rise of Jew hatred, and therefore, you know, they're kind of on default, and now those assumptions are being challenged. Right?
Is this a moment in which we could see maybe a seismic shift? Is this a turning point in the relationship politically that the Jewish community has had with with the Democratic Party?
I mean, if I'm going to oversimplify here, Tony, just for the sake of time. So allow me, if you will, to oversimplify. You know, you can kind of look at the Jewish community as what we would call the religious community, the Orthodox community. And then you have other parts of the Jewish community. They're also like the conservative Jewish community also, you know, and then there are secular Jews who are Jewish, but they don't really in any way practice Judaism. And the religious community, you find that, you know, there's people readily acknowledge that, look, this is an objective fact. Donald Trump was the best president on the issue of Israel in recent memory. That's an objective fact. And so I think what's happening is that the people in the secular Jewish community are starting to see the Hamas protests and what the foreign policy of the United States right now and all these awful things that are developing, and really checking what those assumptions are. Now, the last poll we saw was in February, and that poll showed that a majority of Jews in New York are planning to vote for Trump over Biden. That's significant because New York has, of course, the biggest Jewish population, and there's a big mix of there's the Jewish community is very mixed there. There's secular Jewish community. There's religious Jewish community. So you're seeing already, Tony, some of the movement from those folks more that are more in the secular orientation moving towards the right, just out of recognition of where things are on Israel. And I'm going to get a poll together to answer this question, particularly what you said, because I want to try to track this and see if we can figure out where the movement is.
Well, let me throw another question in here, Matthew, if I might. With the rise of anti-Semitism globally, and of course the curtain has been pulled back even here in the United States after October the 7th, is the Jewish community, and I know it, as you described, it's diverse, but are they rethinking and seeking a closer relationship maybe with the evangelical community that has been steadfast for the most part in defending the Jewish community?
Absolutely. Tony, absolutely. You know, one of the things that I think almost every Jew is recognizing is evangelical Christians, no question, are the best friends that we have ever had. And that is because you love God. And you know, I sometimes say, Tony, that there's no such, I don't have a good phrase for this yet, but there's no such thing as anti-Semitism, it's anti-Godism. In other words, if you hate the Jewish people, you're rebelling against God, right? And if God had picked another group and said, these are going to be my people, the world would hate them.
Well, I see it as the world heading my...
How do you see it? Yeah.
Is heading my big brother, because you guys came before us, and it is, you know, we have something much in common. And our scripture speaks very clearly that as there is a focus on the Jewish community, the church comes next, and we're already seeing it. Matthew, we're out of time, but we'll continue this conversation, I am sure.
Tony, I just want to thank you for bringing that up and bringing this up, because I just want to say very quickly, after October 7th, when I turned my phone back on over the holiday, after the holiday, I had more text messages than I've ever had in my life. And 95% of them were evangelical Christians saying, we love you, we're praying for your family, we're praying for Israel. So,
all right, we got to leave it there, Matthew.
All of them.
Stick with us, folks. We're back after this.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. And boy, we were squeezing every second out of that last segment. So if you'd like to join us in praying for and standing with Israel, I want to ask you to text Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742, because on May the 19th, Sunday, May the 19th, we're going to have a special Sunday emphasis, Pray and Stand with Israel. To find out how you can be a part of that, text Israel to 67742. It's a tremendous opportunity for the church to show its love to the Jewish community by standing with Israel and our Jewish friends. All right, by the way, this Sunday I'm going to be at my West Coast home church, Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills, filling in for my battle buddy Jack Hibbs. So if you're in Southern California, come join us at Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills. Our word for today comes from Deuteronomy 30. See, I have set before you today life and good, death and evil, and that I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways and to keep his commandments, his statutes and his judgments, that you may live and multiply. And the Lord your God will bless you in the land which you go to possess. But if your heart turns away so that you do not hear and are drawn away and worship other gods and serve them, I announce to you today that you shall surely perish. Wow. Notice the progression. If your heart turns away, and the heart here is not the reference to emotions, but thinking, understanding, informed choice. If our intellect turns away from God, we lose our ability to hear God. And if we don't listen, eventually we can't listen. Then the slippery slope. We're drawn further away until we are worshiping demonic powers. To find out more about our journey through the Bible and to join us on this daily journey, text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. All right, in 2020, England's National Health Service commissioned leading pediatrician Dr. Hilary Cass to review the gender services it provides for children and young people. Now, the final report released this week provides a devastating blow to LGBTQ ideology and its and those who are pushing it because of its harmful treatment of children. Now, according to the report, children have been permanently harmed by, quote, a lack of research and evidence on medical interventions, end quote. More importantly, leaders from both leading political parties in England indicate they're prepared to follow its guidance. Will that affect what we do here in the United States? Joining me now to discuss this is Dr. Jill Simons, who is the executive director of the American College of Pediatricians. Jill, welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So I know you've been tracking this, and we've expected the report for some time. Tell us your reaction to these findings. Are you surprised?
I'm not surprised, but it was reassuring to hear Dr. Cass say in her own words that there is significant lack of evidence in this area, and that there is evidence that what we're currently doing or what England was doing was causing harm to children. And some of her recommendations were very encouraging, and I hope that the United States follows.
So, Dr. Simons, give our viewers and our listeners a sense of the breadth of this review and just how non-existent, really, the foundation was or is for these protocols that are being used on minors.
This review was quite extensive. In fact, when they started doing the review, they realized that there was such a lack of evidence. And to understand fully the research and what is needed for children with gender dysphoria, they actually involved the University of York to conduct research or to evaluate the research that's out there. And so not only was it looking into what the clinics were doing, but it was doing background on what we know, what research exists out there currently.
The report, she said that the World Professional Association of Transgender Healthcare, WPATH, had been highly influential in directing international practice, although its guidelines were found by the University of York's appraisal to lack developmental rigor and transparency. So as University of York looked into this, the very organization that has been driving this is doing so without any real foundation.
You're exactly right. This is what we at the American College of Pediatricians and several others have been crying out for years. The protocol that all these guidelines are based on are flawed. And they're based on these Dutch studies that were done, and they were not done on children. The data was extrapolated to children. The creators of the Dutch study have even come out and said this wasn't intended for this population. And so then other groups, like WPATH, as you mentioned, base these protocols on this. And it's faulty from the foundation.
From what they were able to gather in this review, was this area of medicine being treated differently than other areas of medicine?
That was one thing that Dr. Cass says in her opening remarks, that, you know, children deserve to have the same standards of care that every other child or every other person receives when they have they're treated for a medical problem. And this just wasn't held to that standard. And it says over and over in the report, the lack of evidence, the weak evidence. She made it clear that these children are going to be not experimented on anymore, that they're going to be treated as they should.
So given the fact that there's basically no evidence to suggest that this is the path that we should be putting children on, in fact, the evidence would point most likely in the other direction. Is it ideology that's been driving this and not science?
Well, it fits the definition of ideology. You know, in medicine, we push for treating patients based on the evidence and long-term outcomes and science. And clearly there are agendas for people pushing these treatments.
So here's the big question. The UK leaders in UK say they're going to change. They want to amend their protocols, how they're addressing this based upon this research. We have in this country, what I've seen is a reluctance or actually barricades put up so that we can't do this type of analysis. Will this type of research that is coming from Europe have an impact on what's happening here in the United States?
It will eventually. I'm hopeful that my colleagues, especially my pediatric colleagues, will take this like we do any other medical findings and look at the facts and decide to do what's best for children. If we can't, if our profession, you know, can't make the right decisions, then these will be settled in the courts. You know, there's already lawsuits from children who've been harmed, you know, the detransitioners, they've, you know, suffered and their families a lot of harm in many cases. And so now finally the institutions that have done this to them, and even the AAP who and their guidelines, they have been sued in this. So if us as medical professionals, as pediatricians, don't get this straightened out, it will get settled in the courts eventually. We just want this to be resolved as quickly as possible so that no further child is harmed.
You know, Dr. Simons, that brings up a really good point. The institutions have been so infiltrated with this ideology, and the medical institutions that in many ways determine who practices medicine, who gets slapped down and who doesn't, I don't see them doing a course correction on their own. I'm not a big fan of the courts, although I think this is one of those areas where the trial attorneys actually have a very fundamental role to play, because the evidence will speak for itself in a fair courtroom.
Right. You know, I remain hopeful. I speak to pediatricians all the time that are not going along with the AAP or their institutions. Right now, they're afraid to speak out because right. They're being punished. They're losing their jobs, their livelihood. But more and more of us are speaking out, and especially the younger generation, the medical students, are speaking out about this and not putting up with it. So we're trying to support them. And I think it's going to reach a tipping point, I hope, where people just can't stand in the sidelines anymore, and enough brave people step forward.
And that's going to be key, because they are targeting the medical schools, doctors, nurses, trying to really poison their minds and scare them at the very beginning to walk in lockstep with ideology. Dr. Simons, I want to thank you for joining us today. And I want to thank you for being one of those brave, courageous doctors that are willing to step up and speak out and give others the courage to do the same.
Of course. Thank you very much.
All right. Great to see you. I tell you, this is not surprising that these reports are showing this when they can be done. That's why there is an effort here in the United States. Anytime there is a report or a study that's launched like this, they attack the author. They attack the institution because they cannot stand up to the facts. Now, there was another report that came out this week, not a science report. It was a report or a treatise based on theology coming from the Catholic Church, but speaking to this issue as well from a transcendent truth standpoint. But science is in line with truth if we do it in the right way. Join me now to talk about how all this might impact the 2024 election, because this is such a big issue. Meg Kilgannon, Senior Fellow for Education Studies here at the Family Research Council. Meg, thanks for being here on Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Let me get – you heard the conversation here in this study. Your reaction to this study?
Well, I would really love to know what the American Medical Association's reaction to this study is. What is the American Pediatric Association's reaction? When are these medical groups going to come to terms with the fact that the WPATH guidelines are not sufficient to protect children? They're not good medicine. They shouldn't be followed. They're very political. I mean, this is very obvious by now. One of the things from the report that struck me was when they referred to the fact that there was complicity among many, many people, the media, the health services, the government. There were so many factors that had caused children to be victimized by this ideology through the medical community.
This is not the first time we've talked about this. I mean, we actually recently talked about the WPATH leaked documents,
right,
that they admitted this amongst themselves, that all this was on shaky ground. We've talked with the Missouri Attorney General, who is pursuing legal action there in that state for the way transgender practices have been foisted upon children and parents. So this is not the first we've heard of this. It's just validation of all these different pieces that have been out there.
Right. And still we have silence from the major medical associations that everybody uses to justify the ideology.
Right.
Right. They hide behind those groups.
So the science by this report has clearly been called into question that's behind the transgender ideology. But on Monday, the Vatican released a long-awaited document that I've talked about on the program with Al Mohler earlier in the week. It, for the most part, just points to Scripture, which provides a very clear path forward on this issue. This type of information, being that this is such a politically charged issue, could this have an impact on the 2024 election?
Well, I certainly hope that it will. I mean, I would hope that Catholic, especially Catholic leaders and politicians, every Catholic can read this document. It's available online, and it's pretty easy to read. It's about 60 paragraphs long. It's not even that long. And it's I've gotten worse documents out of this Vatican, so I'm pretty happy with this
one. It's pretty much in alignment biblically on issues of life, transgender.
Absolutely.
The timing of this.
The timing of this it's wonderful that we have it now because we can certainly promote it to people and try to encourage people to read it. I hope that it is going to be something that is on the president's bedside and that he will take a look at this
I think he's dismissed it already.
He can take a look at this and try to come to grips with it. This is a powerful document. It was clearly a document that was written by committee. And we have another document that's going to be written by committees, and that would be the Republican Party platform and the Democrat Party platform.
And I think I've announced on the program I'm going to be on the Republican platform committee, so I will be writing. So let all you on the left go ahead, let your head collectively explode. But I will be on the committee once again helping write that platform. And just like this document from the Catholic Church, we'll be drawing from Scripture as we rely on that transcendent truth and the science. We put the two together. That's what we do at the Family Research Council.
Is there a better way to operate than relying on Scripture?
Well, I mean, we can't go wrong because we know it's not going to change. And isn't it interesting that, you know, on so many issues we're coming full circle? You know, on the life issue, we've come full circle now. You know, we talked about earlier in the program, we still have to teach people how to address this issue and talk about this issue. But truth, you know what? You can stand on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Meg Kilgannon, always great to see you.
Great to see you, Tony. Thanks.
All right. Thanks so much for digging through some of this information. In fact, folks, you can find out more about these topics at the Washington Stand. Many of our guests here on Washington Watch with the FRC team write for the Washington Stand and actually take some of these issues even deeper, unpacking them and keeping you abreast of what is happening all around the nation. All right, again, text the word Israel to 67742 to join us in praying for and standing for Israel on May the 19th. All right, until next time, I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, you've done everything you can do when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand. By all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.